I'm Sarah Mack, and welcome to Out for the Weekend. Today, we take a closer look at the bane of the holidaymaker's life, the midgie, find out what's happening in the skies above, and meet the person who's been inspiring women like this to get out of doors.
Not blowing my own trumpet, but I can ride a bike very well now. You know, I'm going on main roads, going everywhere. Initially, I thought I just can't do it, you know, because I was falling, I didn't know how to balance. I thought, gosh, these people must be so clever who ride bikes.
We celebrate our nation's trees and why they say it's unlucky to only see one of these.
Here's how to get in touch. Text 80295, email outfortheweekend@bbc.co.uk or tweet at BBC Radio Scott.
I'm filling in for Fiona, who is away on her holidays for the next 2 weeks. Lucky things. And I hope that over the next 2 hours, we can inspire you to make the most of your weekend and maybe do something a little bit different. Kids, if you're listening, you're probably on your school holidays or you might finish today. So let's do a quiet yee-haw for 6 weeks of no work and lots of fun. Mums and dads, watch out. Well, my main guest this afternoon is someone who spends her life inspiring others and basically changes the life of everyone she meets. She believes in celebrating diversity through adventure with the aim of encouraging communities of all backgrounds and abilities to engage with the great outdoors. In 1995, Pammy Johal set up Backbone, and she's here to tell us more. Welcome to Out for the Weekend, Pammy. It's great to have you with us. In a nutshell, explain what Backbone is.
Oh, Sarah, thanks very much for inviting us on the programme. Well, we're here to entice and excite, which is our motto, people from all backgrounds, all abilities, to get out into nature. And by doing so, hopefully they'll benefit from it and form a relationship with it enough to want to protect it. And we do this by developing leaders and local ambassadors. So we train local people to deliver local environmental projects through all the different outdoor activities that are available.
We'll go back to Backbone later on, but let's find out a bit about you, because I know that you grew up in Coventry in the 1960s, part of a Sikh family.
Yes.
Can you paint a picture for us of your upbringing? What was family life like for you?
We're a very close family, and growing up in the 60s, 70s in Coventry, from a very traditional Sikh family. And if I keep it in the context of being in the outdoors, my dad introduced us to the outdoors by taking us camping every weekend and throwing five kids, mum and dad, in the back of the van, driving out to the countryside and knocking on a farmer's door and saying, come on, let's all camp in here. And just being a wee bit left field, I suppose, for that kind of that era for a Sikh Indian family.
I was going to ask, was that quite unusual for a traditional Sikh family to do that at that time?
Oh, very, very unusual. And both mum and dad really embraced it in many ways. However, with regards to the community as a whole, it wasn't something that Asian girls did. And probably to my mum and dad's quite horrified with the thought that, oh my God, we've got a daughter here that absolutely loves the outdoors and we can't stop her.
So obviously they weren't able to stop you and they took you on trips. But was there something else that sort of sparked your interest? Was there a light bulb moment?
Oh, loads. But if I tell you, there's one specific thing that happened. As I was growing up, we weren't as an Asian girl, we weren't really encouraged to go into the outdoors. We were encouraged to choose professions like going into nursing or the medical field or teaching. And when a teacher of ours, Frank Starkey, I hope he's listening, and Jane Meredith, and I hope they're listening, introduced us to the outdoors through a geography programme and took us out to the mountains. And I can honestly, hand on heart, say I never knew. A girl from Coventry never knew that kind of landscape existed. And immediately all I said was, I want this in my life. But how am I going to get my family on board? And they they've done it. They completely and utterly embrace everything that I do at the moment.
I read in some of the notes that you thought on that trip, as you've just mentioned, that sort of mountains were part of a world that only existed on postcards.
Yes.
So can you describe for us, I suppose, how you felt on that trip? What did it open up to you?
Oh, it's so deep. Everybody that knows me knows that to this day, I cannot live without the mountains. And it's a feeling that's deep inside. It's not just the beauty, it's perspective on life. And it's opened up a whole new world for me. And I think it's really important that other people get to experience what I experienced, so they know there is another world out there without having to let go of your family or your family values. And it was just, yeah, it just opened up this incredible world. It blew me away. That's the only way I could say it blew me away.
So you've got Frank and Jean, your old teachers, to thank for that. So you come back from this trip. And then how were you inspired thereafter to get out and about?
Oh, dear. Well, if I'm honest, I just did it. And I can still remember to this day my mum and dad looking at me going, our girls don't do this. And I would pick up my bike, I'd pick up my backpack, and I would just go. And they'd look at me going, but you can't. And I'd go, I've got to go. And now they took a huge risk.
They never tried to stop you.
They did try to stop me. You know, they did in all kinds of emotional ways and understandable, which is what I understand now. I can completely understand where they were coming from. They were trying to protect me and protect the community and their own our own family. But they were, no, you can't do this. They were so close to throwing me out the house and disowning me, so close. I even got threatened with social services. It's like, you're so bad, you're going to social services. We're going to send you away. But for some reason, and it's the strength of our family. We've got such good love and support for each other now through a journey of understanding. And but at that point, they didn't understand me. And at that point, I didn't understand them and where they were coming from.
So for a young Sikh teenager, where do you think you got the strength and, I suppose, the courage and determination to defy them?
You know, my mum and dad always said to me, God, what happened to you? What happened to you? And I hate to say this, but they're completely to blame. Well, if you think about it, you know, in 1957, Dad hopped on a boat. Well, actually, before that, he wanted to come to England to give his family a new life. He hitched and walked to Singapore to his big brother, got some money, spent 3 weeks on a boat, came over to England and made a go of it. Yeah, and I think giving up everything that you know, that's pioneering. And I think we and all of us siblings have that kind of pioneering spirit in different mediums, really. And I think that's the strength and stubbornness, if I'm honest. Persistence and stubbornness, me and my dad in particular, you know, and I can see my sisters now sitting there going, yeah, they used to be at loggerheads all the time. But I think we both had this real persistence and stubbornness saying, this is what I want for my life and I'm going to have it.
So the wanderlust spirit was there already. It was ingrained in you.
Yes.
And your family, I suppose, took time to accept it, as you've said. But with a lot of these things, it's often the community around them that people worry about more.
Yes.
So how was that received by the rest of the Sikh community?
Can I tell you a story?
Mm-hmm.
I've got to tell you this story.
Please do.
I learnt more about my parents by going to do a solo trip to India and to Nepal in the early 80s. And I went off and trekked in Nepal on my own in the winter, just a backpack on my back. And after that, I went to visit my own family at the age of 27 with Western clothes, a backpack on my back in India. They were either going to love me or they were going to hate me. Fortunately, they loved me. And I came back to Britain and I gave a slideshow inviting all my extended family who were not saying nice things about me. And I told them that this is my life. And I also understood that mum and dad were coming from a place where they wanted to protect me because our culture is so tight and our community is so tight. So they interpret different actions to mean different things. And it was only then at that evening that I could tell my community, my family, my extended family that this is me, I'm 27, I'm not going to change, the mountains rule my life and this is where my life is going to go. I'm not going to marry the way you want me to marry. I'm not going to live the life you want me to live, but this is it. And I no longer want you to give my mum and dad a hard time, that you've got to accept who I am. And that was such a significant turning point. Enough for my dad to come up and grab me and say, I'm never going to throw you out of the house again.
Well, that was a good thing to come from it, wasn't it? And I suppose
absolutely
that
superb.
In the rest of the community, giving that talk to them, did you find that there were others like you who were keen to engage with nature?
Yeah, at that moment in time, I was too selfish and I just disappeared. I went off to America for a long time and just revelled in my passions. And
I can't keep up with your adventures so
no,
far. No,
I have been all, and it doesn't stop. I can't stop. I've been trying to, but it's really since I've come back. I was in America for a long time and came back in '95, and it's only since '95 really that I've begun to share my adventures truly with my extended family. And what an amazing impact. If I tell you what my nephew told me a couple of weeks ago, he's been to Canada and everywhere with Disneyland, and he goes, the best holidays I've ever had is coming up to the Highlands and having adventures in the mountains with you.
That's
and
fantastic.
And I just think if you can get a 16, 17-year-old young lad at this point in his life to say that after experiencing everything, I think you've hit the mark.
Yeah, that's a stamp of approval, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right there. Well, we heard earlier on that you set up Backbone 20 years ago in 1995.
Yes.
Just tell us where that came from. What was the vision for Backbone?
The vision was I came back from working out in America, and there's a saying, life is too short to wear tight shoes. I was wearing tight shoes and I came home, cried across the Atlantic, and it's a vision. Everything that I do is a vision, and it happens. I've known how much the outdoors has shaped me as a person. That's my morals, my values, my outlook in life. And I just felt there were so many people in my own community, particularly women, that didn't even know this existed. And it was really important to share that and to find an avenue. So I set up a wee little project. I didn't have any money. I just knocked on people's doors like I normally do and said, give me some kit. I'm going to take a group of women out camping and get them out into the outdoors and see if they like it. And they came out, I knocked on doors with community groups, and they're like, yes, we want to try this. And I got a group of women out. And since then, things have just kind of escalated. I've knocked on loads of environmental organisations, their doors, and said, look, this is what I want to do. Will you support us? And sure enough, some have said no, but the majority have said yes and believed in us. And it's been huge since we've moved to Scotland, which was in 2005. Our partners here in Scotland have just truly, hand on heart, believe in the work that we are doing.
Well, Backbone seems to have gone from strength to strength, and we'll hear more about the courses shortly. But first, let's hear from some women who have been part of the Backbone experience. I've been told they've been pammyized. Is that right?
I hope not.
Our reporter, Bronwyn Livingston, met up with them in Edinburgh.
I joined this course recently. It's to do with cycling. I had never touched a bike before. I didn't even know how to hold a bike. I'm riding on main roads everywhere and finding out how to fix bikes. And I know now how to take the wheel out. I know how to change the wheel. I know how to do puncture now. And that's excellent. That's through Backbone.
Was it quite daunting in the first instance when you were faced with one of these things thinking, I have no idea what I'm doing here?
Yes, it was. It was. You know, as a child, I have three more siblings. We are four brothers and sisters. And as a child, you know, my brother, who is older than me, he fell off the bike when he was about 10 and I was about 8 years old. And I just refused to go near a bike after that. And all these years, you know, I've been looking at bikes and then that's not for me. No, 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 I don't want to do it. And once I joined this course, it's just this, you know, spirit of being part of it. And I have to say, I don't know, not blowing my own trumpet, but I can ride a bike very well now. You know, I'm going on main roads, going everywhere. It was really daunting. Initially, I thought I just can't do it, you know, because I was falling. I didn't know how to pedal. I didn't know how to balance. I thought, gosh, these people must be so clever who ride bikes. But now I realise, once you're determined you want to do something, you do it.
Sarah, what have you been doing with Backbone?
So I actually started my journey with Backbone around 2009. I only actually wanted to do first aid and got roped into a women's leadership course, and I was the first batch. And that went on to me helping out with the Forestry Commission, working freelance, running the voluntary cycling scheme in my own community, supporting young people to go outdoors. So a whole wide variety of things that I never actually thought I would ever get involved in. I have a massive passion for the outdoors, which I really didn't realise I would have. I thought, OK, I'm going to university now. That's me done. I had done the Duke of Edinburgh Award and I thought, OK, no, thank you. That's the end of that. But as soon as Pammy, she had me camping, -2-3 degrees. It was freezing. It was raining. But the women were crazy, as was I. And all of that came together quite nicely. And I think what I realised was that being in the outdoors, it just is so good for you and it opens your mind to there's more to life. And because my university studies were quite book heavy, it was nice to just have this other side to me where I would be exploring and the great Scottish outdoors, I'd be cycling, I'd be meeting women from so many different communities. I would be helping other people with insecurities and fears go out and open up and just, you know, for the health benefits as well, and even just encouraging my own family to kind of get involved. So for me, it's been extremely life-changing. And, you know, here we are in 2015 and I'm still doing it.
Sometimes we don't even know what's out there and how easily accessible these sites are, these venues are, and how, and making connections and things like that. So it's always been there. You just didn't know what to do and you just didn't know how to go about it. And that's where Backbone came in. And that's how Backbone helped me.
Are there any cultural considerations around taking part in these activities? I mean, thinking about cycling, for example, a lot of the cyclists we see in the roads are the Lycra warriors, and they've got the shorts and the, you know, the tops and the helmets. Manu, you're wearing traditional dress. Mm-hmm. Is that an impediment to getting active?
I think a lot of the women do consider that it's an impediment to getting active, to sort of, I mean, I go out, I'll go walking and trekking in my abaya and my hijab like this, and I have never found it a hindrance. And Dunbenan and some of the steps right at the top are seriously steep, and it's just a case of lift that, you can still go. When it comes to cycling, the clothing has been something that people have raised as an issue. So one of the things we did in one of our open cycling event days was have a step-through bike and say, look, the step-through has a low bar, low top bar. So what you can actually do is, because of the low top bar, you can actually step through it and you can still be wearing your abaya and you can still be going cycling. So we've got a couple of the ride leaders with my organization, Al Mizan, that actually do ride with an abaya on, and they'll say have a slightly looser abaya, slightly shorter so it's not all the way to your ankles, and you're wearing you're on a step-through bike, and there you go. You can actually, it's not a hindrance for you to be in Islamic dress and actually be cycling. I think it's very much in women's minds thinking, oh, I can't do it because of this, I can't do it because of that. And the minute they see somebody actually out there doing it, for them it's like, if Baji Manur can do it, then fine, I can also go out and do it. Why not? Wehe.
Does it make a difference that it's all women taking part?
Definitely it makes a difference, especially with cycling and with anything, you know, because it's more in your comfort zone if it's women only. And then women have their own issues and which can be dealt with within women's groups. And I mean, when it comes to cycling, yes, you know, like Manur said, you know, women initially thought that, okay, this is something when they did it as a child, you know, this is not something for them. But I think it's just a matter of motivation. Somebody has to be there to motivate them.
Add something to that. Yeah. I mean, I know Nena's saying that about her experience of women who have probably learned to ride a bike as a child and therefore felt it wasn't for them. I come, or a lot of the women that I know come from a background where we were not allowed a bike because we were girls. And it was like, oh no, girls don't ride. So as a child, I never had a bike. My brother had a bike, but I was never allowed to ride a bike. So I, again, like Nena, learnt as an adult a few years ago, simply because I've got two boys. So my husband and my boys all knew how to ride a bike and would all want to go cycling. And I said, are you okay? I'll drop you here and I'll read my book and you can go and I'll pick you up at the other end. And they were like, no, we want you to come along. And I was like, how do I do this? I don't know how to do it. But it was, I had this image of being able to get to speed and have the wind through my hair and all that kind of stuff, you know, a bit slightly romantic maybe, but it's been absolutely brilliant.
And another thing, you know, another myth that women we found out, we identified was because a lot of women said, oh, I don't keep well, I have arthritis, I have diabetes, I can't ride a bike. You know, so we had to do educational sessions telling them cycling is actually good for them if they have these health issues. So that was a kind of a myth that we don't want to cycle because we have these physical issues. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's all kind of, you know, getting broken, all these myths, and the women are actually getting on with it. More and more women want to do, who are in their 50s, coming to nearly 60, they want to ride a bike now. So it's excellent.
I'm interested that leadership is so tied in with the outdoor activities. How does that work?
What happens is that women, because everybody saw that women lacked the qualifications or the confidence and things like that, that's where Backbone came in, and that's where they helped us give the qualifications, give the confidence. And especially I'm kind of a youth worker in that sense, so leadership in all general sense is very, very important, because you can't keep the youth in four walls and can't teach them. And they learn in many different ways. And, you know, and outdoor education is one of them. And taking them outdoors, helping them express themselves in different ways and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, leadership is very much in part with that and keeping with that.
Successful leadership is bringing others to success with you, you know. So I think that's what Backbone is about. That's what all the projects we are about, is trying to get our communities to success, trying to get them to a healthier and happier place and to enjoy the outdoors with their families and just open up new ways of thinking, new ways of growing and really learning a lot more about yourself. We had a woman, she had 5 children, okay. She came along to the session, her phone was ringing and ringing. She's like, they keep calling me. And then she goes, right, switches the phone off. She goes, this is my hour, I'm cycling, see you later. And that was it. She said, you know, it's just about having some peace in your life. And, you know, these projects, they help people find themselves. They help them make friends, you know. Sometimes you lose yourself in the world and it's good to just have that time just to think and just to have a bit of fun. And just, you know, have a sense of freedom.
Well, now, you talked about cycling along at speed or standing on the top of a Munro after a steep climb. How did that feel for you?
Absolutely on top of the word, exhilarating, sort of feeling, oh my God, you know, this is a world that has opened up to me that I've always dreamt of. We went out on a ride where it rained, it absolutely belted. It came down, we were hit with hailstones, it was windy, and we had committed to do 21 miles, and we still actually did the 21 miles. We got all 4 seasons. It was just like, are we going to make this? But we were like, nah, come on, we can. And it was us. And it was fine to sort of say, yeah, so what if we're getting soaked? So what if this happens? We can still do it. And we did it.
Go girls. And there you heard the enthused voices of Nina Minhas, Zahra Mohammed, Mamour Campbell and Hina Habib. Well, I'm Sarah Mack and you're listening to Out for the Weekend. My guest is Pammy Johal of Backbone. Pammy, how fantastic to hear what those ladies had to say. Do you know, when I listened to it, I was feeling quite emotional. Do you feel that way when you hear their stories?
Oh, all the time. Sarah, just that's the first time I heard that, by the way. Heard the women say what they've just said. And they've summed everything that we're about. And yes, I do feel emotional. I feel it every time I watch a group go away. We don't just work with women, we work with men as well. We work with all marginalised groups. But when I watch them walk away from our programmes and we have a celebration event, you can see, ask colleagues. It's a very emotional, very emotional. And it's because we're doing it.
I mean, listening to one of the ladies there, she said it's often all in the mind. It's a mental barrier. Is that the most common obstacle that you encounter when you meet these ladies and men?
Yes, it is. It's predominantly ladies that we work with, predominantly women from ethnic minority backgrounds. Yes, it is. However, there are some very clear cultural barriers, and that could be, and McNaw mentioned it clearly there, that some are not allowed to do this unless they have a certain safe space. And that's what we do really well, I think, is that we go into the communities and we we develop relationships with the community so they know that what we're about is come to the outdoors and we will not interfere with any cultural or cultural barriers that there may be. We'll work with them. And the classic one was, you know, when we talked about the Islamic clothing, mm-hmm. is that we manage that. We've had folks, women sea kayaking and mountain biking, mm-hmm. and we tie things and we make time for prayers and we ensure that the halal food is around. And that's not just for one culture, by the way, or one faith. Mm-hmm. We do that for everybody is allowed to be, truly be themselves. They can make mistakes. They can say what they like. That no question is silly. They can really be themselves. So that and I do believe that we create that safe space.
I hope that there's lots of people listening that might want to do something along these lines. And I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who would fancy doing something like this. So who Lovely. Would be eligible to go on a backbone initiative?
Right. What we do is there's two levels to what we do. One is, like the women said, is leadership. That is our number one thing that we do. And that is where we develop local leaders to deliver local projects. So what we've got currently is a number of local projects, predominantly biking, but we have things like community gardens, health walks. And so the best way to get involved is to contact Backbone through our website or email me, and I can put them in touch with the number of initiatives that are already being run by our local leaders.
So you mentioned a sort of community gardens, biking, sea kayaking. What other activities do you do? Can you give us a quick list?
Yeah, well, the activities that we do on our programmes are specifically for those that want to be leaders in the community, and we do them all. And I mean it. I'm talking, we go on, everything that we do.
No stone unturned.
No, not, well, there probably is. We probably don't go kiting and surfing and stuff, but we do things like, everything is about exploring specific environments. So we'll have sea and coastal, and therefore we do a sea kayaking expedition. We have inland waters, so therefore we'll do a canoeing expedition. We have a mountain environment, so we go on a mountain expedition. We have a woodland environment, so we'll go biking and we'll do woodland activities. So they're the kind of activities that we do. We also do climbing, and they also have to do their own expeditions, which is carrying a backpack and going for it, really. So we kind of stick with the traditional outdoor activities, and they're available on our leadership programs. However, our leadership participants in mm-hmm. their local area are delivering things like mums and toddlers walking groups, intergenerational photographic projects, personal development programs, health walks, learning to ride a bike. You know, we've had community groups being really successful in pulling down funding to set up their own community projects of biking projects and walking projects. So it's fabulous. So do get in touch with us via email.
Absolutely.
And I can direct them into the right area.
Great. Well, you mentioned it there, you touched upon it there, and we also heard during the piece about this lady who had five children. Her phone kept ringing and she just said, no, this is my time. But I suppose, how does that experience filter down to their children, and does it?
Oh, my God, yes, it does. And I'm saying that I know too many of our participants where they have changed their life. Sarah, do you believe me when I say that?
Absolutely.
Hand on heart. I can tell you now that they have changed where they... I've known families that have been in Glasgow for 20-odd years and did not know that Clyde Muir Shiel was down the road. And I know now that they've bought camping gear, they've bought walking gear, and they are out. Their life revolves around, when are we going out again? I know too many families that have done that. So, yes, it filters down to their children. And they've also, and if I give you one example, mm-hmm. Asma would have been there being interviewed a couple of days ago. Unfortunately, she was poorly. But her son was a child on the very first Women's Leadership Project. I had him on my back as a wee kid. And today, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I saw him as a young lad, and he came up to me, gave me a hug and goes, when can I do this? When can I do what my mother's doing? And he's only 7, 8 years old.
That's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Well, Pammy, do stay with us, won't you?
Yeah.
Because we're going to meet another inspirational woman who juggles her time between family commitments and her job. We know how that works. As head of visitor experience at the Loch Lomond and Trossachs National Park, reporter Helen Needham caught up with Bridget Jones.
We're going up the path that leads up to the summit of Ben Leddy, heart of the Trossachs. in Loch Lomond in the Trossachs National Park. And the first part of the path, as you can see, just opens up spectacularly. Superb views up Loch Lubnig and the mountains around, birds singing. Absolutely stunning blue sky as well. I've always had interest in outdoor activities, whether that's been, you know, hill walking or paddling a kayak, snowboarding, mountain biking. I'm pretty much into everything, really. Things have probably changed a fair bit in the last few years. I've now got twins to look after. They keep me fairly well occupied, as you can imagine. And yeah, don't get out quite as much as I would like to.
What was it like when you were a child then? Were you out and about all the time? Were you encouraged to be out?
My dad particularly was a keen outdoors person, really into sailing and hill walking. And I certainly remember being what felt like at the time dragged up Stack Polly at age 7 in a pair of bright orange welly boots and various other hills. But actually, I think that sort of sparked my interest in the outdoors. And though at the time, I think sometimes you thought, oh, this is a bit boring. Later on, you got a much better appreciation. And yeah, pretty much, all through my life, I've been in the outdoors, doing one thing or another. Cool, let's have some coffee.
So you're doing a very organised mum thing.
I am. It's definitely a sign of having had the kids to look after. So we've got a nice flask of coffee. I've even brought milk.
I know.
Do you take milk?
Yes, I do.
That's good.
I do.
So I don't, so even that was a bit... I think you just get so much better at planning things. The other thing, of course, I've got here, which don't tell the kids, is I've raided their snack box. So we have some very nice branded cake. Angel cake, I think it is.
Thank you very much.
So we are spoilt.
Sorry, yeah. Children. But necessary when you're out on the mountain.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're just sitting on a rock. We just decided to have a little break from our walk up Ben Leddy and overlooking the Carse of Stirling down to Callander. I can see Stirling Castle and the Wallace Monument in the distance. And then looking up the other way, we go up the Trossachs and beyond. There's a very slight breeze, blue sky, clouds. It's absolutely perfect. It's the perfect day for it. And when I was driving here, I was really feeling the call of the mountain, because it's been quite some time since I've been up a mountain and I miss it so much, and I'm just so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. You just got to get out, don't you? It's good for the soul, absolutely good for the soul. And I think, yeah, and it makes you feel better about yourself, I think. You know, some time in the outdoors, soaking up the vitamin D from the sun and going back home with a positive glow. And kids coming out of nursery, they'll be greeted by a very, very happy, cheery mummy today.
Well, that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because you've got twins, I've got children, and actually life just feels like a constant juggle. And the last thing that becomes available is free time to go and do stuff like this, which is just such a shame.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you just get caught up in it. And I think, it just becomes... I think you've just got to be maybe a bit more planned about it and, make that time to get out and about.
But I think it's that thing of actually taking time away from the normal routine and being around children, because your pace of life changes. And even if you do get your children involved in outdoor activity, it's a very different experience from actually just marching up a hill like you may have done in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, isn't it? Just it's, yeah, quite a different... Yeah, I mean, you're... Yeah, to get out and be walking at your own pace for a change, and yeah, perhaps burning off a few calories at the same time, a different experience. And I think, I've certainly spent a lot of my younger years, I guess, out and about, enjoying the outdoors, and a lot of time, either out on the bike or climbing hills or surfing or snowboarding, whatever. I get a real buzz out of it, and you feel really good in yourself. And I think it's really important to sustain that. I certainly, I think the last while I've not done quite as much. You do feel a little bit guilty when you do take that time, but it's important. It's very important. It's important to have a happy mummy, and yeah. A happy mummy's maybe one that's been on the hill for the day.
Yeah, exactly. And an interesting point too is that even if you are getting your children involved in a lot of outdoor activity and you're out a lot with them, at different stages of their development are paced differently. So, for example, my stage at the moment, because I have a 10-month-old baby, is she's strapped to me and we're walking probably mainly low-level stuff. So that's I feel kind of good about that. But then that's going to change as soon as she gets on her feet. And things are going to slow down a lot.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's. I haven't really thought about it, but it's certainly one of the advantages of having twins is that you get both of them through those stages at the same time. So I don't have to take that backward step, if you like. But yeah, you do, because you go through that phase of pushing buggies or carrying them in the papoose, and I think you're probably your upper body strength gets really quite strong, and then through toddling, it's a lot slower pace. I think. Remaining patient at a slower walking pace. And then, I think, my two at the moment are getting into their biking skills and they're good walkers. They're well used to going out for a walk every day. I've got a dog, which helps as well, because it's part of the routine. But, they're speeding up, and I am anticipating as they get older that they will then start to get faster than me, and then it'll be me trying to keep up with them rather than the other way around as it is at the moment.
Well, that'll be a pleasant change, though, won't it?
Oh, yeah, that'll be a great change. Yeah, that'll be really good.
I think that's it there.
Definitely. Trigger point.
Yeah.
Traditional care. There's a few people.
How are you feeling now?
Oh, superb. It's great.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
Yeah, I know. That's it, isn't it? You do something like this and just think, why didn't I do this more?
You should do it way more often. Yeah. Yeah, it's been exhilarating, great.
And actually, we are so rewarded when we get onto the top here and just behind the cairn and the trig point. I think we should do a 360.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to...
it's all just opening up in front of us, isn't it?
Savour the view, because in fact we are in a very lucky position of being able to see almost all of Scotland, aren't we?
Yep.
Well done. Fantastic. Right.
Now you can ask me to name every one of the summits.
I'm going to test your geographical knowledge here.
Well, I'm going to say that we're certainly going to be seeing the Glencoe Mountains to the north. It may even be Ben Nevis up there.
Oh, that certainly big clear. Hulk.
Yeah, the big hulk looks like it, doesn't it?
Yep, it does.
The shoulder and the north face. Yeah, and the Mamores. And then, you're right down to Ben Lawers, all the hills above Loch Tay, and then as you sweep right round over towards the Carse of Stirling, Callander, Wallace Monument, the Forth, you can see in the distance, and then right down to the Campsies, that'll be Arran in the far distance, Scope Fell, and then round back in towards the National Park, Ben Lomond, the Arachar Alps, and then sweeping back round Ben Duchraig, Ben Lewy. Wow. What a superb view.
It's actually really special, because you feel like we're right on the edge, really, of the Highlands and the Lowlands, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It is spectacular, because you get that, you can see the flat area of the Carse of Stirling, and then you're coming up to the Highland Boundary Fault.
And really, I mean, it wasn't that much effort, was it?
No, I think that's the beauty of a hill like Ben Leddy. You start climbing immediately from the car park, and it's... Yeah, if you're reasonable fitness, it's not too bad at all. You can do it in a half day quite easily, of an evening. Yeah, very, very fortunate to have such great opportunities. Yeah, Scotland's a great place.
Yeah, we're smiling a lot, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, happy mummies, Bridget Jones and Helen Needham there. They did eventually get back from their walk, but no, there was no cake left. Cardinal sin, ladies. Well, I'm Sarah Mack, and you're listening to Out for the Weekend. Here's how to get in touch.
Text 80295. Email outfortheweekend@bbc.co.uk or tweet at BBC Radio Scott.
Now, the good weather is upon us. Fingers crossed it stays. Everyone's about to go on school holidays, so we'd love to know how you're going to be making the most of the holidays and the sunshine. Maybe you're dusting off that tent to go camping. Are you getting packed up, ready to take off? Where are you going? Please get in touch and let us know. Well, still with me is Pammy Johal of Backbone. Pammy, did that piece there ring any bells for you?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, I've always said it's much bigger than the activities themselves. It's much bigger. What we offer here is a vehicle for all kinds of wonderful things, space to be yourself, time away from family, time away from all the other pressures, and just allowing women and men to be themselves.
I know, listening to the girls there, it just made me want to go and dust off my hiking boots and head for the hills. But I do have four little speed bumps, a.k.a. children, but don't tell them I said that, OK? They need looked after sometimes. Now, you're based in Rosher at the moment, in the back of Beyond. Am I allowed to say that? I
mean, you certainly can.
What made you move there?
Well, what if I told you I hit a certain age and I said I'm too young to be comfortable and I better go and do what I want to do next, now. And I love the Northwest Highlands. I used to cry when I left, and I made a very rash move and moved up to the Highlands, and my friends and family thought that I'd lost the plot. But now, 10 years down the line, they know I've actually found where I want to be. My desire to leave Scotland is less and less. However, this summer has been quite exceptional. I've wanted to leave this summer because of the weather, but otherwise, the Highlands I love them so much, and I've moved up there, and I'm not going to go back down south.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's a beautiful part of the world. And Backbone's now been running for, is it 20 years? I said 1995. So has it more than fulfilled your expectations?
Oh, yeah. And yes, and it's significantly changed in the last 3 years when we became a community interest company, and we've now got a board, and that's just kind of excelled things, and we're just growing. And it's brilliant. We are doing what we set out, which is basically developing role models that will become environmental ambassadors, and they will give back to their own community. We do provide segregated activities for those that need it, because there are communities and groups of people that couldn't have this experience unless we provided segregated activities. However, we give them all the confidence to go back into the integrated world. So we help them, our leaders, we introduce them to other environmental organisations, our partners and beyond, who then they go off and start working together and do loads of intercultural activities, initiatives. So we're definitely where we want to be. And watch this space.
Well, I know I was going to ask you about sort of future plans, future progress. You mentioned that you've got a board, which is very serious indeed.
Yeah.
So what is the future for Backbone?
Yeah, the future for Backbone right now, we're at an amazing time in our development. We had a big report done, which is available on our website. And we're now just successfully received funding for 3 years to develop our next round of leaders that will take over the organisation. We've always been about sustainability, and we've always been about our participants. So it's now time for our participants to shine and take over the role that I'm doing and the two board directors are doing, and we've got a 3-year period for that to begin to happen. So it's about the organisation growing. I suppose the organisation growing up. I don't want to grow up, but I think the organisation
none of us do, Pammy. None of us do.
But the organisation is getting there, and we're quite excited about that. So, and literally, we've only just had confirmation of our funding, and we'll be launching that next month.
Fantastic. Now, I wish you all the best with Backbone. It just sounds such a brilliant organisation. But I've got to ask you, because you've been talking about all these ladies that you help, what do you do? What's your sort of ideal weekend? How do you switch off?
Oh, you shouldn't be asking me this. I the way I switch off is I get on my mountain bike, I go climb a mountain, I run. They're the things that I just can't, I cannot sit still. Like a day to day, I hate to tell you this, it's gorgeous out there, and I will be leaving this studio and going straight for a run. So I that's what I do. I revel in the outdoors.
You make me feel tired even listening to you. Is there any activity that you haven't done that you'd like to try?
I wouldn't say activity, but there are places. I'm more into, I love journeys and I love wild open places where very few people have been. And I would really like to go to Mongolia and to Siberia, preferably both of them, either on a bike, with my bike, really. Anyway.
Tammy, it just sounds fantastic. Your life sounds so amazing and interesting. I hope that you get to Mongolia and Siberia. I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Out for the weekend. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you.